We'll be getting started in about another minute or two.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. First of all, from the National Crime Prevention Council and on behalf of the CCDO office, the Department of Justice, I'd like to thank you all for joining us for our Gang Talk Thursday. Today we have Victor Gonzalez, Jr., who will be talking about reentry issues for gang members. And I'd like to read a portion of his biography. Mr. Gonzalez has 25 years of experience working with high-risk youth, including 21 years working directly with youth involved with Houston area gangs. His work included substance abuse intervention, recreation, and various prevention intervention programs. For 6 years, Mr. Gonzalez has worked as a gang intervention specialist and program manager for the Association of the Advancement of Mexican Americans Barrios Unidos Youth Program, the only state-funded gang intervention program in the 90s, serving the heavily gang-impacted East End. Currently, Mr. Gonzalez serves as the Director of Program Services for the Mayor's Anti-Gang Office in Houston, Texas, where he has worked for the past 12 years. He is in charge of supervising the delivery of service for all gang-related programs in the Mayor's Anti-Gang Office, creating and coordinating strategies and collaborations, assisting with policy recommendations for the city, and training gang intervention specialists in the office. He develops gang awareness training materials to educate law enforcement, school personnel, residents, community agencies, and other professionals on how to deal with gangs. And now I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Gonzalez.
Thank you, Sarita. I appreciate that. Hello, everybody. I'm happy to be here. Kind of had a couple of other opportunities to work with NCPC, so with Chuck and everybody over there, and Moses, and recently just meeting Sarita, so I'm real happy to be part of this Gang Talk Thursdays. I guess for me, it's always a pleasure to be able to get to people across the country, share what I've learned over the years in dealing with this population that sometimes people don't always care to deal with. Sometimes people are scared to deal with. And sometimes people who might have the passion maybe don't always have the experience. And I was taught a long time ago, if you learn something, no need to keep it. If you're going to keep it, then be stingy about it. You're not doing anybody any good. So I really try to participate in things that allow me to be able to get information to other professionals who have a desire and passion to deal with this. So when I got approached to talk about the reentry aspect of it, I really want to emphasize, I really tried to think of some things that were very, very specific to gang members. There's a lot of reentry stuff, and there's a lot of folks that are doing a lot of good work throughout the country. And I really wanted to kind of concentrate on the gang member specific and some things that really happen, not just to adult gang members, because I deal a lot with them too, but some of the youthful offenders that we run across and that I've run across in my years of working gangs. It's been a long time. And when you start looking at some of the things that they're impacted by, I don't think people always understand what they're facing. I think sometimes people have the tendency to think, well, you know, they did their time. They were locked up. They were incarcerated in the detention center, short-term, long-term, or in a prison setting, state jail, county jail. And they always think, well, you know, they learned their lesson. They should have picked up some skills in there and come right on out and get that job and do what they need to do to stay away from everybody in the neighborhood. Not easy. Easier said than done. And so today I really want to focus on a lot of that. Hopefully today, Sarita, too, and for the participants, if there's questions along the way, I don't mind taking them. As long as we get to stay on point within the time frame that we have to cover the material. But by all means, it's about you guys. So if there's something that you want to ask or you want me to clarify, feel free to do so. I'm okay with that. Are we all right with that, Sarita?
Yes, we're fine. Thanks.
Okay. One of the first things that I really come to understand with gangs is that you can't always wait for them to come to you. They're not always going to come your way. So you got to get out there and get to those kids. And gang outreach is something that, you know, that's kind of been my niche and my forte is if you got to find them, you got to find them. So when I first started doing this work, it was to get out on the street. So you hit the apartment complexes, you hit the projects, the parks, sometimes even the malls, the movies, the schools. You hang out wherever they're at, and then you got to make the effort to get out there, introduce yourself, throw your program services out there, what you're about, and start laying your foundation for credibility on the streets so that you can get out there and make a connection with this population. So in the same concept as I've done this work, I've done it two ways. You got to get out to the facilities as well. I mean, if you're talking about reentry, you're talking about guys that are already inside, and you're talking about what are they going to do when they're released. And so I've made the effort over the years to get into the detention centers, get into the state jails, and really do some work on the inside. I think that's a lot of work that I think is very necessary up front. Sometimes there's the tendency to be reactive or deal with the situation when it happens, when they're just getting out. I'm a firm believer that if you work on the front end, you don't always have to worry too much on the back end. I mean, with gangs, I think we've become such a, so many agencies and professionals are always like, well, when we have a problem, let's move on and let's create strategies, programming, let's find the funding. And I'm a firm believer after being in this so long, if you have any presence of gangs, you have to have some sense of programming, from prevention all the way to the suppression aspect. I mean, I've been called hug a thug. I've been called gangster lover because that's all I deal with, and I can't see the other side, and that's not true. I understand the need for criminal justice and for prosecution. I understand the need for suppression and zero tolerance, suspension expulsions from the school, and a lot of these kids get incarcerated. There's no doubt. If you're dealing with a gang population, they're going to get locked up. There's no way around that. It's going to happen. So that means you're going to have to go inside facilities, and so creating partnerships, creating relationships with those agencies to be able to get your program people inside those facilities is a huge, huge advantage to being able to get these kids ready to come out whenever it is they're going to come out to start looking at what is it they're going to need upon release to be successful. And the ways that I've kind of really looked at that is conducting the groups or presentations. For example, one of the state jails here, in Houston, I was approached by an employee who was, his responsibility, he was a county employee, and his responsibility was to bring services to the inmates. And one of the services that the inmates were inquiring about quite a bit was tattoo removal. And so when I went into the state facility, one of the things that he asked me to do was just, can you just talk about the office and how to access tattoo removals? And I said, sure, no problem. Not a problem at all. Went in. We were in one dorm. They had the call out. Any inmate that was interested in listening to the process for tattoo removal, come on down. And the COs let them turn out. They come into this one dorm, and then I give my presentation. From the presentation, what came out of it was a lot of interaction with the inmates. And some of the correctional officers were listening, too. And what ended up happening after that was immediately after the presentation, a lot of guys started talking about, hey, man, you know a lot about gangs. You've been around a long time. I actually ran across some guys that I had known or they knew of me from some of their homeboys that had been out on the street in certain neighborhoods. And they said, hey, Mr. G, can you come in and do some groups here? And the one thing that when I started looking at it from the aspect of putting different gang members together in one dorm, at the state jail facility, I think the one advantage I had was at the level of, the offender that they were. They weren't very violent. These guys were doing less than 2 years, on the average probably like 8 months. So it kind of made for a safe environment to be able to look at what could I do if I was going to do anything in that facility. These guys are going to come home. You know, I don't deal with sometimes the 10 to 15 to 20-year guy because I mean, you can put some information out there, but by the time they get out, you'll even hope your program's still around. But what we started to do is I started to create those groups. And what I noticed is that when you allow them to express, when you allow them to share, when they're allowed to connect with somebody who actually understands what they're going through, it makes it much easier to keep the group moving in the direction that you know you need to move in. I'm a believer of you got to know where you were coming from and what you were engaging in and understand that to get out of that mindset and be able to move forward. It was funny because in one of my groups yesterday, I got a new set of guys. We do about 20 weeks, and I got a new set of guys that are coming into the group, and yesterday was the first day. And I asked them, how many of you remember your birth name? And they were like, you know, a lot of them, well, yeah, I remember my birth name. And how many of you have been riding on your nickname that you got from your organization, from your street gang? And it was amazing how all of their hands went up. And when their hands went up, their biggest thing was, you know, Mr. G, I ain't much thought about it until you brought it up. You know, I've been motivated to be such a gang member all these years, to be such a G. It's hard for me to even remember who I am and what I was about before I started to join the gang. And he says, and this guy, he's sitting in the very back, and he says, and I want to make a change. The program is called Make That Change. And they're like, I want to make that change. That name caught my attention when I started asking the other inmates about what was going on from that first set of guys that came through the groups. And they talked about their past, and they shared about what they were looking forward to in the future. And they talked about jobs, and you guys were talking about how to get, you know, access to resumes and all the documents that were necessary for them to reintegrate into the community. And he says, and the best thing about what I liked was that the fellas kept talking about you, Mr. G, like, you know what you're talking about. We can connect. Everybody that's been through this has said you understand the lifestyle, and it makes it easier for these guys to be able to share in group. And I think one of the biggest things that they have to be able to do is to commit to want to make a change. I mean, we can reintegrate all day. We can reenter into community. But if they're not ready to make change and they're not ready to go through some of the things that it's going to take to become successful, they struggle a lot. Because we start talking about having to revisit who you were before you joined the gang, and it's amazing. These guys don't even have a clue. But I think really making a connection with this adult population is huge. Do it no different. I've done it no different with juveniles. Going in and doing one-time, one-shot presentations helps, and then sometimes doing some type of curriculum or some type of so-many-weeks type programming really, really helps engage the kids. And then upon release, we get kids that are looking for us. They're already looking for us. Hey, I came through your group. I heard what you were saying that day. I really wanted to, you know, talk to you about what I can do to stay out of trouble and get out of this gang. Stuff starts to happen that way. The other way we've been able to do it is partner up with, like, probation and parole. I've had the opportunity to work with them for many, many years, and the probation and parole offices, at least here in Houston, have created a gang intervention component, and it's working with those guys that either come through court, and then the other half is with guys who are coming out of our detention centers. And as soon as they get out, they're hitting the ground running, and they've got to follow all their sanctions. So there's several ways to get to them, but I think, you know, if you're going to go and try to outreach to this population, you can't wait for them to come to you. You've got to be able to get out there, get after them, get in their world, get out there and see who they're hanging with, what their world is like, and understand it. Because I'm a firm believer that when they connect with you, it makes it a lot easier to hear what you're trying to tell them, to accept some of the things that sometimes they don't want to accept, even their shortcomings. It really allows you to connect. So you have to be an ex-gang member. It helps, but I'm a believer that it's not always necessary, because there's pros and cons to that. I've had the opportunity to work with ex-gang members over my years of doing what I'm doing, and some fare well and some don't. And probably when they don't fare well, that has to do with the professional experience, the computer knowledge, the being computer savvy, just a little bit on the basics, writing skills, being able to hold a small intervention counseling session, and so they understand the basics of case management and how to access services. Real good at getting out there with the kids and finding them and getting them and bringing them to a program, but sometimes I've watched where some guys fell a little bit of not being able to recognize the professional side. And some people can't always get over that either. And then I've had some that can do it pretty well and are real good at it. So it varies, I guess, by city. I do some training across the city, and I've watched where some of it whirls out very effectively without any issues. And then there's some that are constantly having issues, and a lot of the professionalism kind of stands out in my head. But connecting and getting to them, and when they're about to get out, real, real important. Important are the first 30 days. It's one thing that I've noticed, 30, 45 days, is that, to me, over my years of experience, if these guys aren't working, if these guys aren't engaged with positive folks, if there's something that they haven't latched onto, they start getting antsy. They start questioning themselves. They start to think that they can't be successful. They start to think that nobody really cares. And it starts to become an issue for them because they become frustrated. The living situation is huge. Again, working that from the inside out really helps. I know with the adult guys, I got some guys, you know, they're in their 30s and they have nowhere to go. They've kind of burned their bridge with their mom and their dad, grandparents, or baby mama or wife, and they're not hearing it anymore and they don't trust them. And there's living situations that are real important when you ain't got a home to go to and the only place is the streets. That's tough when you talk about, you know, trying to reenter back into society. It's not an easy thing for these guys. Transitional housing and the ability to gain housing is going to be huge. And some facilities at state jails or county detention juvenile centers, sometimes they have all those things in place. But I've noticed that even when they thought they had it all down, it didn't work out the way they wanted it to. Or the guy may go to a housing center of some sort, a transitional living center, and then he doesn't like the rules. It's too much like prison, and they're telling me what to do, and I really don't want to do that. There has to be some real thought into where are these guys going to stay, who are they going to stay with, and is it going to be a stable situation? Because I really have watched where you thought the most stable situation was in place, and it looks like it from afar when you're just visiting and talking to the family before the guys are getting out or the girls are getting out, and it looks all good. But then when you get there, not everybody's comfortable with each other. Obviously, the more gang involvement with family members or a living situation that you're at, the easier it is for you to get back into the gang, the easier it is for you to re-engage in some of the activity that may be going on. And then you've got basic stuff like you've been gone a year, and now you're back at my house, and I don't like that. You're in my way. You're taking up my TV. You ain't paying no rent. You ain't got no job. All these different things start to play within the family, and that starts to create a lot of stress and tension. I had a guy about 2 weeks ago. He's 33. He's an OB. He's a blood, and he's got a lot of rank, a lot of status. Guy's got 14 felonies. And let me tell you, it's not easy when you're getting out and we're going to the employment services folks and we're trying to get a resume done and get him registered on online for some of the services, the employment services that they have here in Texas, and you start to realize he can't use the computer, can't even move the mouse around, doesn't know what the cursor is and why do I make that thing blink, you know, and little bitty things. And when you talk about a guy who has 14 felonies and he got caught up when he was 14 years old, 15 years old, was certified as an adult for a murder case. He's tatted up all over his face, his neck, his chest, his back, his arms, all the way down to his wrist, his fingers. He can be an intimidating sight. And very positive, though. He's very positive and upbeat. He came to my groups for about 3 months. And everything was looking good. And then as we start to get out in those first 30 days, he's noticing people are looking at him different. He's noticing that mom's not really, you know, I love you, son, but man, you're 33, what you waiting on? He's got an older brother who's moving in a direction, doing real well. But then after about 2 weeks, things weren't going the way the mother thought they should have gone. She started giving him a hassle. And so he's living in the house. Now he's back with baby mama, and so he goes that way and hangs out with her. And but still thinks about his mother because there's four other siblings, younger siblings in the house. And one day he's like, hey, Mr. Big Man, you know, I ain't had no money, and I ain't been, you know, I've been thinking about, he's a bounty hunter, so he talks his slang, and he says, I've been wanting to go hunt, Vic. I want to go hunting. I said, man, we can't do that. You know we can't do that. And so when he would get upset, he would call me. And one day I was picking him up to take care of his resume, and he says, you know, Vic, man, it's going to be 30 days next week. I'm almost 30 days out, Vic. And they have this thing in their head, at least the adults do, they have this thing in their head that I've dealt with, you know, that 30 days, that 45 days, and it's a lot of things that are told to them while they're incarcerated. They talk about statistics and who makes it and who doesn't. And for some reason, he had it stuck in his head. He says, in 30 days, Vic, if it ain't moving, I'm going to go hunt. He goes, but today, Vic, man, I need food for the family, my mom's. I'm learning that my Social Security check from my little sister is running out because she's going to be a freshman, and that was from when my dad got murdered. And he says, Vic, I need to take some food over there. He says, I don't want to go hunting for $15, Vic. So I'm sitting there listening to him, and he's processing with me, and I couldn't help but sit there and say, you know what, I got 15, don't worry. I'll take you to the supermarket, we'll get what we need to get, and we'll make sure that, you know, your family eating, and then we'll keep doing what we got to do. And just the relief that he had, and even when we went to the food market, mind you, you know, I said, okay, I'm going to go 15, 20, he's going to hit me for 50. You know, because it's a big family. Even when we were going through it, he had the respect and still had the dignity to say, hey, Vic, man, serious business, $15, man. I got Roman noodles, I'm straight. Some potatoes, we can stretch potatoes, that's a starch. Because we get a family pack of hamburger meat, I can make this, I can make that. And I'm listening to him, and when you see him, you wouldn't think that that would come out of his mouth. And so it was really important for him that in 30 days, I've got to be able to do something. You know, I remember when I went to your group, Mr. Vic, and I remember you said that we should use this skill and that skill. He goes, and I'm trying. He goes, and it works. He says, so I learned something when I was in there. When I was locked up as a juvenile, they told me I needed to get my GED. He says, I got my GED. He says, and I want to do some things, and I'm trying to practice there, but he tells me, you got to feel me, Vic. I've been a gang member for over 15 years, and here I am trying to do something different. And I got confidence in you, Mr. G, because, you know, I went through your groups. I know you. You know me. We conversate. You've taken care of me and my family this first few weeks, you know, and everything's going good. He goes, I just need that job. And it's frustrating because when we're going to these places to try to find those jobs, that list gets smaller and smaller because of all the felonies he has. So he's on that 30-day kick, and we ran into a 45-day program. So now I got him thinking 45 and even 60. And I'm telling them, hey, it's going to work. Something's going to pay off. All this homework we're doing, all these staffing agencies that we're going to, all these places we're going to, it's going to pay off. You just got to be patient. And so when you get frustrated, you got to call me. And he's done that. He calls. He was going to fight somebody. Before he fought him, he said, Vic, I'm going to hurt him. And I knew what he meant. I said, he's going to try to kill this boy. He said, nah, I ain't going to do all that crazy stuff, Vic. I don't think like that no more. He says, boy, you know, he come at me, I'm going to hurt him. You know, something simple like that. He goes, and what stirred it up was that he had a conversation with his mom because she overheard, and she called me. He said, you need to talk to this boy because he's going to do something dumb. And he got mad because she called, you know, because he was like, I'm 33, I ain't a kid, why are you calling him? And then when we got to conversating, he said, Mr. G, I was going to call you, man, but my mother jumped on it before I could. You know, so when you start looking at where they're at, they really do count those 30 days. I'm serious, just listening to him, he just starts talking about it, and I'm like, let's get off that 30-day kick. We're going to do something. Let's talk about 45 and 60 and see what happens. So it's real, real important in the beginning to really listen, really be there and be supportive in those first 30 days. Be patient with them. Do a lot of coaching, a lot of guidance, because there a lot of the stuff that I've been trying to teach a lot of these guys is very different. And when they're gang members and you're telling them to talk different, act different, I'm telling you, it's very, very difficult for them because they're not accustomed to it. One thing that I've learned, both with the young and the old, the kids coming out, the gang-related issues when they first come out. There's a whole bunch of other stuff I'm going to cover in a minute, but when they first get out, what I've learned, before they even hit the community, they're already keeping up with what's happening in the community. They're keeping up with who got shot, when did they get shot, did they die, did they get? Was it a drive-by shooting? Was it a kick-door home invasion? Did somebody take somebody's corner? Somebody take over somebody's block? Did a rumble happen at the park? You know, they keep up through letters. They keep up through visits. They keep up through family. And they're keeping up with all these things that are going on. And it's real important that if you're connecting with them on the inside, and this comes up, for the person who's going to be working with them upon release, it's real important that I stress you understand the dynamics that they came from and where they're coming out to. Because some of these guys got locked up for something they did more times than not at another gang member. And so there's this all this unresolved street beefs that go on. There's all these old rivals that are still out there not forgetting the things that you did to them before you got locked up. Some of it goes away and some of it doesn't. There's a lot of variables and there's a lot of dynamics that can dictate that. If you have a lot of suppression going on, could you wipe out a gang? You could if it's a small local gang. You could do some things, and if he's gone 6 months and he comes out, he doesn't have to worry about it because they're no longer there. But if it's an area that's constant with gangs and you have a constant gang activity going on in any given community, these guys are constantly paying attention to what's going on out there. They have to, especially if they've done a lot of work while they were in the gang. And the guys call it putting in work. If they put in work for the gang and they've gone out there and made a reputation by criming and vandalizing and committing crimes against gang rivals, you know, people don't forget that. And, you know, you can make a reputation for yourself as a G out there on the streets. But, you know, when you do that, I always tell the kids, you think you're creating more friends when actually you're creating a whole lot of enemies. So these beefs, they stay around for a while. And you have to remember that they're real. They could happen. And he needs to be thinking about what are we going to do to avoid some of this stuff. When they first get out, they get challenged sometimes by their own gang. You know, where you at, man? Well, you know, you did your 6 months, you did your 9 months, you did your 3 months. Where you at? You know, how come you ain't coming to the meetings? And you done gone soft on us. And somebody got in your head and now you talking to some counselor people or what? You know, how come you're not back out on the block? Where you at? You ready to get paid? You ready to get your rank? You ready to do these things? They start to challenge and they'll say things to try to intimidate these kids. A lot of pressure. When you have a guy who's really trying to work or a girl who's really trying to work a program in the facility and really wants to make a change, and you got to come out and hear that from friends that you've had for sometimes seems like since they were in kindergarten or in diapers, you know, it's really hard to turn the other cheek. It's really hard to say, you know, I'm not with that, I'm okay. And even when they do, sometimes they don't always say it with full confidence, but you know, it takes them a while to get used to it because they're still questioning. And then I've got those guys that say, you know what, I'm done, it's over, I don't care, they can come after me. And then you have to worry about that because then that aggressive mentality that he learned while he was in the gang starts to come out. Well, if they want to come at me, Vic, it's on. You know, I ain't tripping, I don't have to be a gang member no more. I don't have to have my colors on, I don't have to clean my block. I'm going to take these tattoos off. They want to come at me, it's all good, I still got a gun. You still hear that kind of talk. I still carry my knife if they need to come. I got to protect myself from my old gang, it's all good. I ain't worried about it. You know, but that mentality still kicks in. They may leave all the colors and stuff behind and say, I'm not part of this gang anymore, but some of that mentality is still there. Bottom line, you have to check that to some extent. You've got to be able to process that and teach them how to deal with situations that are not in a violent manner. Be a little more rational. Think about it before you move and, you know, problem solving and decision making and looking at what's going on in the future and not just stir the moment, boom, let's go, because then you're right back, you're locked up all over again. And I think sometimes these guys, there can be a level of paranoia. There can be a level of fear. You know, I don't want to go back. I mean, I had a guy about 4 months ago, did a 10-year stint in prison, and he was transferred over to the state jail to finish out the remainder of his 9 months. And here we are, he's got about 2 months to go, and the fellas in the group are telling me, hey, Mr. G, hey, your boy, he ain't coming to group no more. He's getting scared. I said, why? What's up? Because he's talking about, you know, getting out, man. And he's talking about he ain't got no family and he don't know where his kids are. And he's scared. He says, and Vic, we can't even go to the yard. He won't even go out in population into the yard and work out with the weights. He says, and we told him, hey, you know, Mr. G said we got to get out, man, get some sun, start to feel that air. Let's work out. Let's do some stuff so that, you know, when we ready to go, being outside is not going to freak us out because we're always inside. We don't get no sun. And the guys were constantly saying, hey, Vic, you don't want to go outside. So I had to go to his bunk, talk to him, and ask him what's going on. He goes, man, I'm scared to go home, Vic. Straight up. He goes, you got me thinking all this stuff. He goes, don't get me wrong. I got much love, much respect. He goes, I'm not worried about my gang so much. He goes, but I worry about the cops. I worry about my friends, old friends. I worry about where am I going to stay? Who's going to be there for me when things are tough? You know, am I going to have to go back? Am I going to get a job? You know, I don't even like people telling me what to do, Vic. I don't know if I can handle that. So many things started to come out, and he had brought up a few things, but he had never brought up his son. And when we sat at the bunk and talked, he was talking about in his dorm, he started talking about his son, and it was amazing to see how scared he was to be a dad. Because the case that he caught 10 years ago at 18 years old, he caught it and took the case for his own father. His own father didn't even step up to the plate. And it was his father's doing. He was the one that committed the crime. But, you know, he said it was his son. He snitched out his son. His son was like, Vic, I didn't do that. Listen, I don't want to do that to my son, but I'm scared that all I'm going to do is pass on what my dad passed on to me. And it's amazing to hear, you know, some of that stuff because he's like, I don't want nobody to know I'm out. I don't want anybody to know I'm out. I don't want the cops to know. I don't want nobody to know. I know I'm going to be clean, no paper. I did my 10 years. He goes, but Vic, man, he goes, I'm scared. I'm paranoid. I'm scared about what's going to go down. So it's amazing to see how that stuff starts to happen. When they do get out, and they're faced with the gang stuff, and it hits them in the face quicker than they think. Just understanding how to live without the support of the gang is very difficult for them. One of the things that one of the inmates and some of the kids have said in the past is that, Vic, you know, when you talk about us being just us and being away from our gang and not being in the everyday world of being a gang member, he goes, man, Vic, it's like feeling butt naked. He's like, you ain't got no clothes on. Everybody looking at you. He goes, because you don't know how to act. You don't know whether to run, move, cover yourself. You know, what do? He says, Vic, that's how you start to feel. He says, because you want to do right, but when you have your homeboys and you've got the money and you've got the drugs and they put you on, you get in this power trip and you have access to all this stuff and it's so easy, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, Vic, you just want to play with it because it's just so you. You're so used to it. You're so used to hearing it. You're so used to living it and breathing it. He goes, it's really hard to sit there and talk different and dress different and really stay comfortable. So what I've tried to do with that is introduce a lot of that stuff to them while they're incarcerated and talking a lot about that stuff. Even if they're coming in off of probation, on juvenile probation, and they're reentering after so many months, and we didn't do a group inside, it's some of the first discussions that we start to have when they're released, when we're meeting with their families. Is really understanding these are some gang-related issues you're going to run across. And just the mere fact that you have to dress, the kids call it prep Texas over here. They call it, if you dress preppy, Vic, then, you know, you have people have a tendency to leave you alone. But he says, but Vic, man, I don't like that. I don't like feeling like that. I don't like I'm used to my khakis, my Dickies. I'm used to my Air Force Ones, or I'm used to my flag. My flag ain't around. They go through all these things. You know, I'm used to saying cuz or what's up, what's popping, what's cracking. You know, all these different ways of talking in the gang world, they have a real hard time with it. And it's really sad because there's a lot of guys that even when they start to do that, they still have to worry about that old beef. And retaliation is huge. And I can't emphasize enough, like I mentioned earlier, if you're going to deal with a gang kid, you got to understand what dirt he still has there. What types of things is he still going to have to deal with? And are they really over, or are they pretty legit? And this is where the partnerships come into play. I'm very active. I'm very a person who likes to create partnerships with other folks, even law enforcement, even when they don't always agree with me. Criminal justice, you know, prosecution in courts, dealing with the schools. I'm a real proponent for being out there and having to work with other people, because if you're going to work gangs and you're going to work these guys, you have to understand that it's going to take a lot of different people to help you. It's not going to just be you by yourself. If you're trying to do it by yourself, I'm telling you, that somebody who's been in this long, not going to work. It's very difficult. You can't be Superman, Superwoman, Super Program, You have to be able to collaborate with other folks, and you have to find folks who are going to be able to understand your population. Because I'll be honest, when you talk about collaboration and you're talking about putting a kid in, he needs drug treatment, but at the same time, let's get him off the street because they're trying to shoot him, and we can get him off the street for 90 days and put him in drug treatment and knock out two birds with one stone. The treatment facility has to take him. They have to want to work with him. They have to understand that, you know, nobody's going to come over there and retaliate at the facility. They need to know that, you know, our office is going to be there and that they can call other people and people will respond, because some of these agencies are not equipped and ready or trained to deal with gang members and the gang dynamics. So if you're a gang program and anything that you can do to enhance their services and have them more knowledgeable about how to deal with gang members and gang situations, the better, to me, the better off your community is going to be. Because these guys deal with guilt. They deal with, some of them can't sleep. There's a lot of trauma. There's some grief counseling that they need to be dealing with. And let me tell you, it's not easy to get them to those mental health services. First thing out of their mouth, I ain't crazy, V. I'm not crazy. They told me, they tried to give me that spill when I was locked up. I ain't feeling it, Vic. I ain't coming out here. I ain't taking my meds no more. I know I'm bipolar, but I ain't taking them. You know, I know I'm a little depressed, but I don't need that. You know, and it's sad because you're like, oh, okay, now we're going to have, this kid could go up and down. This person can go all kind of ways. But the biggest thing they feel is like, you know, you think you're calling them crazy and you're not. That's not what I'm telling you. Sometimes you guys have these, and you got to be able to communicate that with them or be the person who gets them back, bridge the gap, who gets them back to get those types of services if that's what it is. Because they're going to feel guilty for leaving. They don't want to always relocate. I had one kid, juvenile probation, I guess about 4 months ago. His house got shot up 4 times in 1 month, 2 times in 1 week. And this boy didn't want to go home. He didn't want to leave. He said, they ain't running me out of my house. I'm not leaving. Everybody else can go. I'm going to stay here. And he's 16. And the battle that we had to get this boy to move, we got him going to live with family members. And this boy walked back. We took him about 30 minutes away from where he lived, out in the suburbs. And this fool walked all the way back home, back to the neighborhood. Took him about 3 hours. The route he took, he didn't know how to get back home. He went all the way home. That's how stubborn he was. He's like, I'm not leaving. He goes, these fools are not going to keep coming at me and expect me to be scared and leave. You know, and I had to really, you know, really get him to understand why we have to do this. You're not going to complete probation. You just caught an adult case. You're going to have to deal with both probations at some point. You're going to have to deal with it. So you need to move and get up out of here before you catch a more serious case. Because your dope case ain't nothing but a misdemeanor. I said, but your other one over here, you got to finish out probation. And we're not going to finish out like this. You're going to end up reoffending. We already talked about that. He didn't want to listen. It became a safety issue. And long story short, the probation officer picked him up because the gang unit said, our HPD gang unit had got word that the rival gang was having a meeting. And some of the rival gang members actually told the officers that there was a hit out on him. And so when they relayed that to him, they had to act on it. And we all came together and we put a plan together and we got the family to make some moves until we could get him where he needed to be. And he was incarcerated and he's still there. And here we are 4 months later and I've got the mom just now thinking of moving. Get out of there because it's just too hot. The gang stuff has really picked up in that area. That same kid, we had a death that happened with a real close friend of his who was gunned down by that same rival gang who was after him. So now you can imagine all the families that are involved in this. The families are freaking out now. Now all their sons are are targets. Some of them are coming out of placement and they're worried. Some of them are on probation facing placement and parents are worried. And we've got some things going on and we're having to manage all this stuff and it makes it very difficult. So now I'm having to go into this facility here in a couple of weeks to start getting ready to deal with the 4 or 5 guys that are going to come out from that same gang. And their feelings right now, anger. Some of them are mad. One day they're upset, depressed. Another day they're cool, I'm not going to do nothing. And then I'm getting a call from the facility like, hey, you guys are off the wall right now. They're talking about killing people and shooting it up and this and that. And so you start having all these conversations going on. You got to be able to get out there because the gang-related stuff is really going to come about. when you get into the probation and parole supervision, I think what's real important, we've been lucky and we've had a real long relationship with juvenile probation and juvenile parole here. Not too much with our adult folks, but mostly with juvenile probation and parole services. And what's really been neat is to see how they've been able to create a gang component that is intensive supervision, electronic monitoring. They do 2-3 visits a week, random curfews, random UAs. And then they partner with us, the social service agency. And that's kind of the role we play. So as gang outreach, gang intervention specialists, the one thing that we've been able to do is to make sure that the family knows our role and knows their role. I take it another step further. We have these things, if some of you are familiar with the comprehensive gang model with the National Gang Center. If not, I encourage you to kind of venture into that, listen to a little bit of that, and read it. I use a lot of it here. I mean, it's the model that we use here, and I push across the state. And intervention team meetings or multidisciplinary teams are huge. They're a huge help. We've been able to help a lot of kids that are coming to back out to make sure we're preventing situations, intervening immediately in situations, because we have all this information that's coming out of the facility, and we're getting it before it even hits the street, months in advance, months. And it allows us to be able to do work on the outside, because in these meetings, we're talking about clients that we're working with that we have on caseloads. And then the second half of the meeting, we're talking a lot about the gang trends, the gang activity, and then talking about strategies. So with probation and parole, it's really allowed us to be able to create a real solid relationship. But what happens, unfortunately, is that sometimes the PO and the kid don't always hit it off very well, especially when they're coming back. You know, I still got to deal with you, and why am I still on probation, all these questions. And so we have to kind of bridge the gap and kind of be the buffer and get that kind of taken care of. Sometimes the kids don't always understand the sanctions. They're not always sure. At least they say they don't know, but, you know, a lot of times they do know. They claim to have lost all their paperwork they got from court. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And then you're constantly getting the pressure from the homeboys. Here, what we have is we have this team of probation officers. And so each probation, there's about 11 of them now. They've grown really in the last 2 years. And each one is assigned to a certain area. So it's not uncommon for us to target a gang like Southwest Cholos, and the PO works that gang. So the kids know the PO. So before the PO even interacts, the kids already kind of know who she is or who he is, what's his style, you know, what's his pattern, what's her pet peeves. You know, all those things are already out there. And so we've had to really be careful with how that stuff rolls out with probation. So it's been really neat to kind of see how it goes, and it works very effectively. We've done some good stuff with it. But the kids, the guys, when they're coming out, sometimes they're not in tune with it. So we got to constantly have to be able to let them know what's going on. When we get into the family dynamics, I talked a little bit about it, but I think when you don't have food, you don't have money for bills, your housing is in question, maybe something happened and the housing folks are about to put you out because too many kids are hanging out there that are gang-related, or too many reports with police, or you got somebody that's living there that's not supposed to be living there. All those things come into play within the family. And I've seen it both in adult and juveniles. When they're coming back, if there's families there that are gang members, you know, current, past, and you still have that aura going on in the house, because that's just what it is, it's really hard for a guy to really maintain, or a female to maintain, when she's coming out. If they're constantly drinking, fighting, and going on, what kind of environment is that? And it makes it really difficult. So anything that you can do ahead of time to alleviate some of these family issues and concerns, I think it'd be to your advantage. We've watched where we've had to do some work with a parent by herself while son's in treatment or while he's incarcerated, because together they couldn't do it. So let's get mom to work on hers. Let's get him to work on his while he's incarcerated. Let's get it all together, and let's slowly, as he's about to be released, start getting and doing some things with a therapist or with somebody who's going to be able to get through the family counseling that's needed with his family, because it's amazing to see all the old stuff that comes up. And if you're dealing with gang families or gang kids that have been involved in gangs, man, the trust is just tore up from the floor up. There's no trust. You stole from us. They shot our house. We got almost jacked at the store because you were throwing gang. All these different things that happen over a period of time, the trust is really just messed up. And there's no no foundation. You have to start creating it, because if not, the kid's going to come right back out to that, and he's going to fail. He's not going to do very well. Any questions? I know I'm moving pretty quick, but any questions? Okay, school-related. One of the things that I've watched with kids coming back out, or even adults seeking GED or college or vocational, is that getting into the school piece, the kids, if they have a reputation at their home campus, schools sometimes won't take them. You're a gang member, you're a problem here, I'm not taking you. And if you're going to come here to back to the school district, you've got to go here in Houston. You've got to phase in at the alternative center that the district has. So you phase in 30 days, 15 days, and then we'll see how you do, and then we'll send you back to your home campus. And that's all good, but when a kid is locked up, or a person is locked up and they're used to a smaller setting, and they have one-to-one quite a bit from the teacher, and they have the ability to ask questions and you know, get out of learn a little bit more about math or how to better comprehend or read, and then you put them back in a classroom that's got 35 kids, and some of our schools, 40, with a teacher who really maybe doesn't manage very well. The school is huge. That's overwhelming for a lot of these kids, especially the gang kids, because when they're in that setting and they don't have very much, the trust is not built with the school administrators, school police, school counselors. When you've kind of burned all your bridges, it's really hard to come back in without any issues. Something always seems to happen, and I've had to be the buffer many times for a lot of these folks, because the administrators wanted, well, Vicky did 6 months, so, you know, also we have him at the PO, and I didn't even know he had a PO. Let me connect you guys. Let me connect you so you know what's going on. You have a phone number, and so that you and your assistant principal who's dealing with him will have that direct connection. He's got to follow this. He's got to follow that, to my knowledge, but the PO can really, really nail it down for you in detail. Well, what about the gang stuff, Vic? Well, this is what's going on with him. He did his time. He's really talking a little bit different. He's really not wanting to engage. He's been out a little bit, a couple weeks, and I'm not seeing him reengage with the fellas. I said, and I don't think he's going to have any issues here because none of his homeboys are here. I said, so being able to kind of buff some of that and clean some of that up and set some ease for some of these folks in schools, sometimes I think really helps, because the kids are going to have a lot of my kids, at least here, 80% of them, 75% of them, special education students. And so they're not always, going to be that academically astute. I have some that are very smart, but a majority of them, special education, and you've got to be able to have that time to work with them, and sometimes it's unfortunate. So when they're not feeling connected and things ain't rolling out very well when they first get out, you're going to start having attendance issues. They're not going to want to go. They're going to want to find a smaller setting. They might start contemplating, hey, I only got so many credits. I'm behind. I'm 16 years old. I'll be 17 in 3 months. Hey, Vic, if I get with my PO, can we talk about going to GED? I can take it at 17. You know, I can do this. I can do that. I'm only three, four months away. Can we do that? There's so many different things we have to look at, but the pressure of going back to school sometimes is a lot. And if you have gang activity on that campus, it even takes it up a notch, because now you're wondering, should I even go into that setting? I've been hearing what's happening while I was incarcerated. They say there's not that many in there, but if I show up and they remember me, even if I'm not dressing in my colors, and I'm not saying nothing, if I lie low, are they still going to mess with me? Are they still going to say stuff to me? And that starts to become a real, real factor for them. And it sometimes becomes overwhelming and stressful, and they just, you know what, I don't want to deal with it. So you got to have somebody that can help smooth that out. Employment challenges. Obviously, the more you got on your record, the harder it's going to be. I'm telling you, with my boy Kevin, I gets me frustrated, because we start going through the jobs that he could actually apply for, and you know, when we start getting to case by case basis and felonies accepted, then something pops up like, well, no aggravated felonies, no violent felonies. And I'm like, oh well, there just went three of them, and you got one or two to pick from, and you're trying to do street level door to door knocking with these businesses to get these guys in and find jobs. Sometimes it can be frustrating, overwhelming, because people just don't want to take the chance in somebody who has such a long criminal history. But, you know, here I've been fortunate. We have a few, but Kevin isn't finding that luck. And so it starts to limit what's going on. When you start looking at birth certificates, IDs, social security cards, those are huge for a lot of guys. Some of our facilities, our adult facilities, help you with that before you leave, but it's whether or not the guys access it. But we can't move forward if you don't have those things. And so I've been able, been fortunate enough to create a partnership with our WorkSource Solutions here in Houston, where they have $7 IDs, $11 birth certificates, you know, and it makes it very easy for us to get that. It saves more than half. And some of these guys, when they're coming out, they're not coming out with anything. Communication and interviewing skills, some of my gang members, a lot of them, they don't know how to talk. If they ain't talking gangster, they don't know how to talk sometimes. And even when they try, it doesn't sound right. And they know it doesn't sound right. And then they feel like they're being fake. So sometimes the communication skills are very, very important to be teaching along the way as they're trying to find the job. Because it's funny, if they don't have confidence, they really want to try, but they can't do it. And I'll use Kevin again, my 33-year-old blood. When he gets out, you know, he's, y'all, appreciate it. That's all he says. And I'm like, hey, shake his hand, say your name, squeeze it tight, tell him I'm really interested in a job. I really appreciate what you could do for me. We have to practice that in the car before we can even get out and start talking to people, because his thing is, you know, already, baby, you feel me, and this and that. I'm like, we can't talk like that. We've got to change it up. You've got to be able to communicate with these folks so they don't take a chance on you, but you have to sound motivated. You know, and the only way I can get them to think about it sometimes is like, this is how to think about it if you're hollering at a female. If you really want to talk to her, you're going to give up. They're like, hell no, I'm not going to give up. I said, and you going to come at her all gangstered out, all crazy? Nah, because then she ain't going to want to be me. She's going to be scared. I said, so you got to change it up a little bit. You got to gain confidence enough in yourself to go talk to these businesses and these agencies so that they would want to take a chance on you. Because when you don't feel, when these guys start to feel like it's not going to happen, it's never going to happen, man, every time we go talk to the employment counselor, Vic, it just doesn't look good. They get very frustrated, very, very frustrated. And now you're testing their manhood. Now he's 33, now I'm a man, I ain't got no job, I ain't got my own house, my own car. You know, when I was selling dope, I had it. When I was running the gang, I had it. And now I ain't got it, Mr. Vic, and that's frustrating to me as a man. I got my daughter. She needed school supplies, so I hooked them up with school supplies. Needed some clothes, we found some clothes. You know, we did everything we could to supplement these services, because if not, I'd have thought he'd have reoffended by now. But he's still patient. He's still working through it. And it's because I've been able to have all these collaborations and partnerships to be able to get some of the things to kind of ease some of his frustration and stress that he has from not being able to get a job right away. And then some of the other guys in group that came to the group, they are working. And I have to remind them, yeah, but they ain't got 14 felonies. They don't have that. They have less felonies. They don't have as many. And some of them have a TWIC card. This is a card that they can use here down at the dock. And some of them have it. You don't have it. I said, so, you know, we've got to be able to, you know, figure out ways. Remember, you're not them. You've got your own set of circumstances. So constantly getting them to understand what's going on is huge. And so when we talk about some of the services, the case management, incident response, I've had to get in the middle of things. We had a shooting a couple days ago. 14-year-old kid got shot in the leg behind one of our middle schools. We get in the middle of it, and there's a pregnant girl in the mix. Somebody's daughter has a father who's an OG. I know him. I just found out about who he was yesterday, last night. We're going to have to make some conversation. We got these kids who just got out of being in detention, and they've been beefing. It's old beef. They heard he got out, and here we go. And we're having these issues on the street, so we've had to get in there and try to mediate over the long term, but it may take a while. But immediately getting on the incident and beefing up visibility, and probation was involved, so we had to make home visits, and we had to get cooperation with law enforcement and families and witnesses, and it's working itself out right now to the point where they've got two arrests. They got the shooters. And it looks like they're going to get the shooters for a couple of more that nobody wanted to talk about. But now that they're incarcerated, now they want to talk about it. And then this other kid who just got out, he's like, I ain't trying to go back. I don't want to reoffend. I don't want to shoot at these guys. But now I just got shot. What you want me to do? So we're having to talk the kid down and talk some sentence to and some sense into him. And then we're also looking at, do we need to relocate this kid? This probation going to need to talk to another county to be able to have a courtesy transfer. So there's a lot of things, from mentorship to alternative activities. There's a lot of things that you can do with a lot of these guys and a lot of these kids. But you got to remember to start wrapping it up. You got to remember that the gang members, they live how they live, and it's not fake. It's very real. It's very real how they've lived. And at the same time, when you're talking about reintegrating and getting back into the real world, it's very scary for them. There's a lot of uncertainty. And sometimes they figure, you know, I put so much work into being a G, I might as well stay one. You know, and I ain't put very much work into being normal and a good citizen. Why bother? You know, I'm 30 years old. I've been in juvenile detention 4 times. Why even? You know, they start to give up. And so when you're able to be able to help them through that, they start to realize a lot of things, you know, because they don't understand that I'm not going to have that job, or all these tattoos are going to prevent me from getting a job, or, you know, I'm not going to be able to stay in school, you know, till I'm 26 years old. You know, they don't get it. And you have to be able to help work through all that, because that's probably the only thing they know is gangs. And if you're an agency who deals with them and you have you're very savvy in gangs, well, then you may be the only support that they have. And at the same time with that, I tell you, don't underestimate them, because a lot of them can do a lot of good things. Even though they quit and they make excuses and they do some of those things, they don't follow through. I guarantee you, I tell you what they do is that they'll surprise you sometimes. And what will end up happening is that you can have some very successful cases. I mean, three or four of my guys, I'm like, 1, 2, 3, 4, just got out of the state jail. $13.50, $16.50, $11.50, $9.50 an hour with felonies. Bloods, Crips, and some of my prison Hispanic gangs that are here in Houston. And they're working and they're making it happen. Juvenile probation, kids that were some of the hardest kids to deal with when they were coming out, working, going to school, passing, graduating, moving on, getting GEDs, and enrolling in our community colleges and doing what they got to do and leaving the gang lifestyle behind. So it's not something that's impossible. I think it's very, very important that, you know, consistency is very key. Creating partnerships, establishing relationships, I think is very huge in being able to get these kids and these adults to be successful upon release. Because the more you have before they leave, the better off your chances are that you're going to be successful with these guys and these girls. Because I just believe if you can do work behind the bars, do them. Do them, make a connection, and follow through with them all the way out on the outside. Any questions?
Does anybody have any questions for Victor?
Not at this time.
I have one question.
Okay.
My name is Joyce. I'm from Ellis Heights, Sweet and Seed in Rockville, Illinois. So one of my questions is, how do you identify whether or not the person coming in is part of a gang, if you don't know? I'm new to reentry, and
okay.
So how would I be able to get that information or identify it?
Well, some of the ways that I've been able to, there's several ways. One way is through street gang outreach. When you start to meet these kids, they let you know what's going on. However, I give an example here with law enforcement in Texas. They're the only ones that can officially document somebody as a gang member.
Okay.
And if you're coming through court, what starts to happen in court is that somehow, some way, a gang-related incident, or they were identified with other gang members, or something happened, and through court documents generated through police, because the police have to generate the report, it usually hits the court some kind of way, obviously. And so if gang comes up, then you're identified that way.
Okay.
You have to be able, I think, creating the partnerships, and then you're going to have a lot of kids that claim stuff. They claim they're in a gang. I hang out with the gang, and they're not formally initiated or clicked in. To me, I take them anyway, because if we're out on the block and the rival sees you, it's not like they're sitting there asking me, hey, excuse me, you've been clicked in? Because you ain't been clicked in, you can run. We only want to shoot the guys that are clicked in. You know, it just doesn't work that way on the street. So that's kind of the way we've been able to do it here. A lot of the kids we already know. I've been around here that long, so, you know, I know who's who lots of times. And then through all the other services that I was mentioning, they get identified as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions? If not, I'd like to thank Mr. Gonzalez for this conference call today. And I have to say, as he mentioned earlier, I met him a couple of weeks ago, And I learned a lot from him at the Project Safe Neighborhoods Conference at this time. And I must say, Victor, I learned a lot again today. I was taking a lot of notes. So I want to thank you very much for your time and the information that you presented to the group today.
Well, I hope it helps. And if there's ever anything that you need, Sarita, feel free to, you know, give my number out, or I can give it out. It doesn't matter. You know, call
yes,
me.
You can go ahead and give it out right now, your email address, if you wish.
Okay. It's V as in Victor, M as in Mary, Gonzalez, G-O-N-Z-A-L-E-Z, 13, the number 13, at S as in Sam, V as in boy, C, global.net.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. This ends the conference call today, and I'd like to thank everybody who participated on this call, and have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you so very much also for inviting me.
You're welcome. No problem.
Thank you. Please stand by.